The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite. Nothing in this podcast is intended as investment advice, and the people in this podcast may hold positions in the stocks they talk about. Do not buy anything based solely on a tip or recommendation. Please do your own research.
Welcome to the podcast on Monday, the 28th of June, 2021. On the podcast today, Ian James, CEO of Silver Bullet Data Services, explains the business model and the potential on their first day dealings on the stock market. Also on the podcast, Ed Dawson, Managing Director of Prospects Energy, summarises their 2020 final results and highlights some of their upcoming milestones. And Christian Taylor Wilkinson, CEO of Altona Rare Earths, talks about their exclusive agreement to acquire their first asset, the Monte Muambe Rare Earths Project in Mozambique. Plus, at the end of the podcast, I have two lists for you, the top five most followed companies on Vox Markets in the last 24 hours, and the top five most read RNSs too. By the way, you can check out both these lists at voxmarkets.co.uk, where you'll see lots of other content. Zach Mears, Bulletin Board Heroes, what's he covering there? He's looking at 88 Energy, Cambridge Cognition, i3 Energy, Haydale, EcoAtlantic, Hurricane Energy, IQAI, Cadence, Pantheon, Remote Monitor Systems, and Extract Resources. You'll see videos there. In fact, me and Paul Hill write their video on stocks to follow. There's also an article on Silver Bullet, and there's one on Totally Healthcare, there's one on i3 Energy, and of course, don't forget, check out the COVID-19 Index. Biggest rise of the day is Tech Capital, up 4.6% to 17 pence. Second biggest rise there is one I own, Gfinity, 4.7 pence, up 3.3%. Biggest faller today is Avacta Group, down 5.3% to 180. Check that out at voxmarkets.co.uk.
Vox Markets is an online community of investors that runs a free mobile and desktop platform that allows you to track news and updates about any UK-listed company, offering RNS push notifications, detailed charts, pricing data, and much more. Find out more at voxmarkets.co.uk/app.
And joining me on the podcast right now is Ian James, Chief Executive Officer of Silver Bullet Data Services. It's SBDS. Ian, thanks for joining me.
Justin, an absolute pleasure. Great to meet you.
Yes, big day for you. Listing today, floating, big deal. Busy day, I assume, is it?
Yeah, very busy, but very good.
Okay, before we get into some questions about the specifics of the business and where you're hoping to go, can you just summarise what is Silver Bullet all about, please, Ian?
Yeah, well, Silver Bullet operates in what I would broadly describe as the digital or data transformation space. Mm. And what Silver Bullet does is help big global brands or our clients to really harness data and the new technology that enables that data to move around the ecosystem or move around their organization to improve marketing return on investment. So getting bigger bang for your buck for using data and tech to improve marketing outcomes. That's fundamentally what Silver Bullet does. And it does it through helping clients in our services division. So helping clients think about the big strategic questions they need to answer to really improve marketing outcomes, and then plumbing in infrastructure and helping them to work out how they actually do it, but also in products. And we've launched a flagship product called 4D that really solves for some of the bigger issues that are now coming down the pipe, driven by changes in regulation, especially around privacy and specifically around the cookie. And we'll talk more about that, I'm sure, Justin.
Yeah, exactly. Well, let's get into that. 4D. I mean, I saw some news about Google trying to delay its third-party cookie thing, because, of course, a lot of the advertising relies on that. But explain what 4D is, and explain, if you can, how it's a solution for post-cookie era, and just explain that cookie thing, if you could.
Yeah, no, totally. I mean, so, you know, the inflection point, as I would describe it, that we've arrived at was predominantly driven by the change in regulation that were brought in by GDPR. GDPR was the big European regulation that came into force a few years ago and has now grown teeth and is starting to bite in the industry. And what it's really about is helping consumers to be at the forefront of privacy. So rather than brands and technology companies being able to exploit people's data, it's all about protecting those consumer rights to be privacy first, so consumer privacy first. And one of the big things that GDPR, which has now been replicated around the world, by the way, it's not just a European thing, it's a global thing in the United States as well as in Asia. So that regulation sets the bar. But what's happened recently is over the last 18 months, Apple, Firefox and other browsers and access to the internet have deprecated the cookie. So they said no more will you be able to drop, as a brand, drop a cookie on Justin to track him around the web and therefore retarget him with ads. So, which I've always found to be a particularly unpleasant experience. But anyway, it was predominantly the way that advertising was done in digital media, for right or for wrong.
Yeah, yeah. And so going forward there, how does that work then? If they can't track you, so what happens now then?
Right. So you referenced Google. Google have delayed their final sunsetting of the cookie by 12 months, but fundamentally it's inevitable. So we live in what we call the post-cookie era. Mm-hmm. So that means no more tracking using cookies. So that's really what we saw 2 years ago, Justin, really, was when we were talking to our clients that are the likes of Heineken, Jägermeister, mm-hmm. Dolce & Gabbana, big global consumer brands. They're asking the big question, what do we do when the cookie goes away? And we looked in the marketplace and actually there are very few products that help clients to target. So we've invented one called 4D. And what 4D does is it, instead of using an identifier like a cookie, it actually turns that on its head and says, actually, I just want to know where the environments are, where certain types of consumers are going to be spending time. I want to target the context, the actual environment itself, rather than the individual cookie. So we've invented a product that takes that, what we describe in the industry as contextual targeting, upper level, because there are contextual targeting products on the market, but none of them were really geared up for where the market's going next, which of course is video. With more and more viewing coming off TV sets onto online viewing, be it with TV apps on your TV or indeed over any of your devices, fundamentally the advertising industry is moving to online video. So we've built out what we call a contextual targeting engine or a contextual outcomes engine, which I'll explain more about, for video, which is our predominant differentiator. So we built a product that can target for video in this post-cookie era.
And how does that work? Who does it integrate with? And why is this important?
It's really important because this is a complex industry. And it's complex because there's lots of different technology doing lots of different jobs. So we talk about that as an ecosystem. Mm. So what 4D does is it fits seamlessly into that ecosystem by integrating with lots of other technology points. Now, a technology example would be Google, for example. Google have significant infrastructure in the distribution of advertising, not just in search. So that technology 4D integrates with. It's called DV360. It's their demand-side platform. But there are lots of examples of that. A good reference point in the investment market is Trade Desk. Mm-hmm. So Trade Desk is a big scale demand side platform. We're available, 4D is available to be bought through those types of environments. We also, so we integrate with that whole, what we call the demand side platform environment. We also integrate with lots of other data sources because what clients really want and what agencies on their behalf, who buy the media on behalf of clients really want is better outcomes, better return on investment for their marketing. They don't care about the data. They don't care about the technology. They care about the outcome. So our focus when building 4D was saying, we want to integrate with as much technology and as much data as other data sources so that Heineken and Jägermeister and Dolce & Gabbana can get better outcomes from all of those different integrations. So we solve a big problem in the post-cookie era of integrating into other technologies like DSPs and also integrating into other data sets.
Yeah. And is there many people doing this, or are you one of a few, and what's unique about 4D?
Well, when we looked at the market a couple of years ago, we realized that because of the position we take, we help our clients to solve these problems. Mm. We wanted to look in the market and see what technology was available to solve that problem. And the problem was, okay, it's post-cookie, but it's also post-cookie video. So I want to put more of what used to be my TV advertising into digital video, please. Can you help me with a product that identifies the best context or environments to place that video ad? And we looked in the market and remarkably, that was not well catered for. Mm. So there was lots of catering for cookie-based targeting in video and lots of contextual targeting in non-video environments. So text environments, we would describe it. So we set about building a solution that solves that problem. And that's what 4D does. So we set about a defensible position as a business. So our defensible moat is building out for video contextual. So contextual being post-cookie and video being where the market's moving and where a large number of media dollars or the digital spending dollars are going to come. So we've set up our business to deliver into that new problem that didn't exist in the current competitive set.
Yeah, yeah, okay. That's 4D. So let's look at your service side here, the service side of the business. I mean, obviously, we've been through COVID. What's it like at the moment? What's the outlook like? I mean, you know, how is business there?
Yeah, I mean, we've had a great, well, everyone's had to adapt. Let's take things first. You know, COVID is tough in the sense that we had to adjust this time last year. However, our performance was good. So we grew during COVID. We grew significantly, actually, as we have done every year since inception in 2016. But that was really born of the fact that this is a once-in-a-generation shift to digital. And that's really woken all of our big clients and business in general to know that they have to adapt to this digital transformation. You have to, in order to connect with your customer, you have to adapt with what COVID accelerated. It didn't start, it accelerated the shift to digital. So that then turbocharged by GDPR biting and the cookies being deprecated, you know, though that heady mix really has turbocharged Silver Bullet's position in the market. So I'm pleased to say we've, you know, our Q1 numbers, we've traded ahead of our budget targets by over 15%, but we're also in position where we really feel the wind at our backs now, and we're already 75% plus booked for this year. Already we see that historically. So I'm not making forecasts, so that would be right. But the performance we've had to date is real wind at our backs as we see this, you know, real acceleration coming out of the COVID lockdowns. We live in a COVID era. We live in a transformed era. But we're also seeing that energy coming back into the market, and our numbers are starting to reflect it.
Yeah, absolutely. And you mentioned some clients back there, some big names there. Can you mention, just repeat those and just give us an overview of your clients?
Yeah, I mean, we are blessed with our client base. We live to serve our clients first and foremost. So, you know, we've earned the right to work with some of the biggest trusted brands in the world, and we hope to continue to grow that over time. An example is Heineken, Jägermeister, Dolce & Gabbana, Fiat Chrysler over the years. Now, more latterly, we've been doing some great work in the UK with ITV and Channel 4, helping them to transform their organisations as part of their digital transformation to a, you know, online video future, if you like. So those are the kind of businesses that we work with. We're attractive to global brands because this is a global issue. So we help a lot of our clients develop strategies and transformation implementation work across multiple geographical markets. For example, we work in over 10 markets geographically with Heineken now, from Vietnam to the United States. So this is a global issue, and we tend to work with global clients that need to globally transform. So it's exciting for our business and gives us a rock solid foundation that we can build off for the future and scale in both services and, excitingly, with the 4D product.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Well, I suppose scale is one of the reasons you listed, I suppose, but give us some other reasons. And you raised 9.5 million. What are you hoping to achieve that? What are you going to do with that?
Yeah, so AIM, we think, is a great opportunity for us. We've seen lots of, I think, the last 18 months of digital transformation-orientated companies. Growth on AIM has been fantastic. S4 Capital is a very good example. I think Tremor is probably another topical good example that recently transferred to NASDAQ as well. But I think AIM for us is a really solid foundation that gives us credibility globally, because we are a global organization. AIM is recognized and the UK market is recognized. It gives us real credibility for our clients. It also gives us credibility for M&A activities that we will be looking to assess strategically over the coming months. We're able to use the AIM currency to trade in terms of M&A. So we're looking forward to those opportunities. And we think that it's a marketplace that we want to be open. It's not often that you can find super fast growth stocks in tech. Often they tend to be US orientated or VC orientated, and we want to pursue a different route. We think the public market's a great place to be. We love the discipline of it. You know, we've done, you know, we love the verification and we love the transparency that it presents for us as an opportunity for investors.
Yeah, absolutely marvelous stuff. Okay. Well, every day on the podcast, Ian, I highlight the top 5 most followed companies on Vox Markets platform here. And so to get on that list, people have to hit that follow button on your page. So give us 3 quick reasons why someone right now should hit that follow button and add Silver Bullet to their watch list, please.
Fantastic, Justin. So firstly, you know, we are at a once-in-a-generation inflection point in regulation and a shift to digital. And Silver Bullet operates right bang in the center of that. Secondly, we've got an established, well-run company that's grown every year for the last 5 years and will continue to grow, that is now transforming from services into very scalable recurring revenue products. And thirdly, we've got a super solid management team that is really established and has done this before. That management team is also overseen by a fantastic, respectable board with lots of AIM experience. So we've got deep expertise to scale businesses. We've done it before at a point in at an inflection point that is probably the most exciting in certainly in marketing history since the, I would certainly say, since the sort of end of the 90s in terms of the dawn of the internet.
Excellent stuff. Ian, good to chat to you, and hopefully we'll catch up in the not-too-distant future. Thanks very much.
Thank you very much, Justin. Appreciate it.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite.
And joining me on the podcast right now is Ed Dawson, Managing Director of Prospects Energy, PXEN. His ticker there. Ed, thanks for joining me.
Thank you for having me on.
Yeah, you've had a couple of RNSs out, a bit of news out the last few days, loan notes rollover and the final results for 2020, and we'll dig into that if we could. But before we do, Ed, if someone's listening for the first time or they've not heard of your company, explain what it's about, please. Summarise it if you could.
Prospects Energy is an investment company, obviously listed on AIM, and we've got two core assets, the Selva project in Italy and El Romeral in Spain. We're very much focused on gas being the transition fuel in Europe, and we've got a very exciting 9 months coming on with the production finally, we hope, coming on in Italy. But there's been some strong movement there in the last 12 months.
Yeah. Marvellous stuff. Okay, well let's get into this financial result. Let's start off with operational highlights. Of course, it's these are 6 months out of date now, but it's good to look back and see what you've been achieved. So, take us through the portfolio. Give us an overview, if you could, Ed.
Yep. So the portfolio, the balance sheet is largely attributable to our project in Italy. The Selva project was drilled late 2017-2018 and due on to come on production next year. As well as Selva, there's a Selva East, Selva North, Selva South, but lots of reserves there and lots of contingent resources, and in fact also 15 BCF net to us on prospective resources. Mm-hmm. Elsewhere, we have El Romeral, which is a power station near Seville. We own half of that through a company called Talba, and we brought that into the company a year ago. We spent last year waiting for the transaction to be approved, and that finally happened this year. But that's it's a really interesting project because it's an underutilized power station sitting on top of 11, 12 very well-defined prospects that shallow, therefore the cost to drill them up is low, and the permitting has started there to bring those on production.
Yeah, excellent stuff. Okay, that's operations. We'll go into an outlook in a bit, but let's go into the financial review, if you could, Ed.
Yeah. I suppose a couple of key numbers for us is the assets. Mm-hmm. Compared with our market cap. We reported assets at the year end of 5.75 million sterling. Compared with our market cap today, we're what, 3.5 million? Yeah. Interesting. We effectually mark the assets to market. You know, that's what we've agreed with the auditor, and it's based, for example, the Italian stuff on our CPR, and we update the forward curve. So I think the market was slightly disappointed on Friday. Obviously, a little markdown in the assets from 6.3 to 5.7. Actually, though, commodity prices, as I think people know, have been very strong. And in fact, if we were talking about the half-year results today, we'd see an increase of 1.5 million, as opposed to a decrease of 600,000. So bits of swings and roundabouts, but as I say, we're half a year into it and looking forward, so that's good. Admin expenses came down. They would have dropped off another 100,000 if we took out some non-cash items. We are running a relatively a lean ship, but we do have, and I think it's important, we have a core team of people who are, for example, providing services to the Spanish project to help drive that forward. So we all are also recovering, costs. It's not, just not sitting in HQ sharpening pencils, but actively doing things.
Yeah. It's a funny picture there. No, I didn't suspect that. But so let's look at the important stuff, Ed, now. So looking forward at what you hope to achieve, maybe in the next, 6 months, what's happening? What's the big milestone to hoping to tick off the list there?
Well, it's all about getting to cash flow positive, and it's also actually not just cash flow positive, but strong cash flow for us then to develop out the wider portfolio. There's plenty of follow-on opportunities in Selva and El Romeral, as I've discussed. So how do we get to cash flow positive? And that comes from Italy. So therefore, the production equipment needs to be put in place once finally permitted. That's €580,000 net to us for our 17% share. We've seen today that we have support from some loan note holders. We would be looking to the development finance, not through equity. And then what happens, but we've talked about production between 100 and 150,000 standard cubic meters a day. At CPR prices, to today's prices, that's 1.3 to 2.3 million euros of revenue to prospects. That's the range. So as you see, that propels us from consuming cash to generating cash to develop out the wider portfolio. So our job in the next 6 months is to put that financing in place, support the operator in development of the project. And that's in Italy. In Spain, we've actually seen very strong electricity prices there. They're 50% higher than the historic averages. Which is great for that project, whilst we're working on permits for more wells. There looks to be some opportunities to increase production from the historic wells as well. The team have been actively looking at that now since we took control beginning of March. So again, that would be a nice fill-up if that's possible.
Yeah. And what's that? Just touch that news about the rollover, if you could, the loan notes, if you could.
Yeah, we put in some loan notes back in 2018. Some capital repayment was due the end of this month, the end of December and the following June. We've had support from the loan note holders to push that back 18 months. So that all, helps with... it's part of the financing plan, I suppose, of getting Italy on production. And that they're supportive, that's good. And again, it's all part of the plan that isn't always necessary or visible to the outside world of doing our bit to get Italy on production and the company moving forward on a strong foot.
Yeah, marvellous stuff. So you're quietly confident, happy, Ed?
Yes, the key has been moving Italy forward. Quite rightly, at times people are sceptical about that, but we've seen demonstrational evidence of things actually happening with the change of environmental minister and necessarily permitting being signed off within weeks of his new appointment. So, the operator called that right, and I think they're calling the next 6 months right as well. So that's all good.
Okay. All right. Well, let's summarise it, Ed. If someone's not following the story but like the sound of what you're talking about here, give them three quick reasons in summary why they should hit that follow button on your page on Vox Markets and add Prospect Energy to their watch list, please.
We've got a strong asset base in Italy and Spain. an asset base that we can grow off. And we've got a strong technical team that can help do that. And also, importantly, I suppose the third reason is the Italian assets coming on stream will change the dynamics of the company. We'll move to cash flow generation, and there's going to be a big change on the dial, as it were, for us in terms of cash and cash being generated.
Yeah, absolutely. Marvellous stuff. Ed, good to chat to you, and hopefully we'll catch up in the not-too-distant future. Thanks very much.
Well, I'm going to have plenty of news for you, Justin, to talk about. So, yeah, I'm sure we will catch up soon.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite.
And joining me on the podcast right now is Christian Taylor Wilkinson, Chief Executive Officer of Altona Rare Earths. ANR is ticker there. Christian, thanks for joining me.
Good morning, Justin. How are you today?
Yeah, good, thanks. And a bit of big news for you. End of last week, the acquisition of a rare earth mining project. We'll talk about that in a bit. Before we do, Christian, just for people not familiar, just give us a brief overview of Altona, if you could.
Of course, yeah. Altona's rare earths, we are listed on the Aquis Stock Exchange. We're looking to transfer that stock exchange listing to the London Stock Exchange. We started the process at this point. We don't know how long it'll take. It could be another month or two. But we have a strategy to explore rare earth mining assets in Africa. And as you mentioned in the start, we have made our first acquisition. We signed our first agreement last week. So the plan obviously would be to start exploration work, maybe find a few more projects for us to work on, raise some cash, and let's see what the next few years
does. Yeah. Well, yeah, let's talk about this one then. The first agreement, exclusive agreement to acquire first asset in the rare earth elements mining sector. That's in Monte Muambe. Can you explain a bit more about this, what you know about it, why you like it, etc.?
Yeah, of course. So we've spent the last 12 months looking for the right project to start our journey with. We chose sort of last May 2020 that rare earth mining is where we want to be. The market for rare earth metals, the need, the growth is just phenomenal, and it's not going to stop. You know, so many industries around the world use the materials that are mined. There are only a very few companies who are mining rare earths. In the UK, there are three listed companies already doing it. They're all in the exploration phase, apart from one who is in production. And we just thought this would be a great sector to get into, because I know a lot of mining companies do struggle when it raises for raising cash. But I think if we can demonstrate that we have the right projects, that we could economically take them to production, the market need is such that I don't think we will struggle, touching wood as I'm saying that, to raise the funds to do what we want to do. So this particular project, it's in northwestern Mozambique. Mozambique is very familiar with international mining companies. They have a great infrastructure, road and rail. And the project itself, of all the ones we've looked at, and we have looked at quite a few, this had the most available historical data available to it. It was explored by another company between 2010 and 2012. So something like 165 holes were drilled. They're saying that only 5% of the actual area, which is a volcanic crater, a very old volcanic crater, have been explored. And the previous company who was looking at it were looking for a different mineral. They're looking for fluorite. Mm-hmm. So speaking to our geologist, he's excited about this because the results for rare earth metals are above average, I would say. Mm-hmm. And these were taken from areas where rare earth metals probably weren't, the first choice. The company, as I said before, we're looking for fluorite. So we start looking in the areas where we think rare earth deposits would be. We're sort of hoping that the results, the data, the analysis will actually be even higher to put this project well above average in the total rare earth oxides, which is sort of the general measurement for this project. So we're looking to get maybe a 4-5% total rare earth oxides, which would make it as long as the more sought after rare earths, the neodymium and the praseodymium, the ones used in the electric vehicle permanent magnets for the batteries and the wind turbines, as long as we can find significant quantities of those two particular rare earth metals, I think this is going to be a very economically viable project. So we are focused fully on this for the next 6 months.
Yeah, yeah. Well, let's be honest, the demand for rare earth is not going to wane anyway, is it? It's only going one way, you know. So, in fact, just explain to people not understanding why demand will go up. Can you explain why that's going to happen?
Yeah, look, every government around the world at the moment is pushing the green revolution. You know, people have been talking about it for 20 years, and David Attenborough's, you know, been talking about it on his programs. And but the reality is, we're talking about the major industries, the car manufacturers, the power suppliers, the things that are fundamental to our everyday lives, you know, even as much as mobile phones. So all these industries, all these devices used in these industries have quantities of rare earth metals in them. And the odd thing is, talking to the layman, they never heard of the term rare earths. Everybody has a mobile phone, but they don't understand that, you know, it contains rare earths. And without them, the mobile phone wouldn't work. Permanent magnets is the fastest growing segment which uses the rare earths. And every electric vehicle has a permanent magnet in it to drive the car, I suppose, mm-hmm. the best way to describe it.
Yeah.
Talking, you know, many kilos of this. Some sort of random examples that have been pushed out, which I like. If you look at an American nuclear submarine, for example, it has something like 6 tons of rare earths in it throughout the various components to make it work. Again, sort of fighter jets, again, we're talking about the similar quantity. So it's not sort of like gold where you need a couple of ounces or that sort of stuff. We're talking proper big weights. And if you look at the facts, like, you know, the UK government, every house is going to be powered by electricity generated by wind, and every car on the road from 2030, I think it is, or I don't know if they've pushed it back to 2040 now, is going to be electric. That is a lot of rare earths. Until an alternative solution comes along, and there isn't one on the horizon, that's what we need to do. And at the moment, I suppose it's worth saying that China currently controls between 90 and 95% of the supply, because all the production facilities, you take the rare earth ore out of the ground and it has to be processed, and most of those processing facilities are in China, and they have occasionally flexed their muscles and squeezed the market, so you see immediate price hikes. China itself, of course, they need all these materials, all these metals for themselves, for their own growth. They are the largest country population wise on the planet. So the world is looking for an alternative source, and Africa seems to be a really good alternative, viable jurisdiction to work from. I guess because on the global political stage, it doesn't sort of sit in any one camp. It's not on the Chinese side or the Russian side or the American side or the European side. It's, let's call it, politically benign on a global scale. So a lot of companies are going there and are looking into it. And I think we have a competitive edge because we have a team of people down in Africa. They're well known. And I think it's worth saying that this acquisition of Monte Mwambe, there was some competition to acquire it. There were other people looking to acquire it. But the current owners of the project wanted to work with Altona because of the relationship we formed with them.
Yeah.
I think also the fact that we're moving to the LSE helps, because the London Stock Exchange, as you know, is, you know, one of the world's, if not the world's, most recognizable market. You have a company listed on the LSE. It means you've been through all the regulations and you've jumped all the hurdles to get there. So you are a viable business. You know, you're not a private company that might just disappear into the ether somewhere. So all these things, you know, this isn't by chance as well. We've been putting together this plan for the last 12 months. You know, what would make Altona a desirable investment partner? And we put together all those ingredients over the last 12 months, and we're just rolling out this plan now. And this is the first acquisition. Very good. Very exciting.
Yeah, yeah. And it's quite worrying, I think, the fact that China holds so much of that supply, the, you know, the power of that, because they're in no way transparent. I mean, you know, and like you say, they can flex their muscles to manipulate the market. So, yeah, it's good to diversify that supply. And but where are you now with this centre, and what's next?
Yeah, okay. So we signed the agreement. The shares are currently held by a company called Asocati Investimentos, which is a local Mozambique company owned by a number of shareholders. the license is going to be transferred into a special purpose vehicle, which has already been set up.
Yeah.
So we are currently applying for the license to be transferred into the SPV. We're going to be making up the board, which Altona will have two seats out of three, so we'll have control of the board. And the first stage is to apply for the environmental license to allow us to actually start putting people on the ground with their drilling rigs to start putting holes in the ground. We expect that to take a few weeks. And once that's in order, we have a great team, I said, in Mozambique, a legal team. And also we're working in conjunction with the previous owners who are really, really supportive of what we're doing here. So I don't foresee any hiccups in this process. And the expectation will be then to get drilling by the end of Q3. So hopefully by the end of September, we'll have an engineering team on site with their drill rigs, and we'll start putting in a number of holes to help confirm that what we know from the historical data is in fact true, or in fact better than what we've determined, because we'll start drilling in the areas we think are more relevant to mining rare earths.
Yeah, marvellous stuff. Okay. Well, Christian, as always, if you could, summarise in three bullet points why someone who's listening to this, who likes the sound of the story but not yet following it, should hit that follow button on your page on Vox Markets and add Altona Rare Earths to their watch list, please.
Yeah, it's always a lot of fun, this. We've signed our first, or we've secured our first mining asset. Mm-hmm. People have been investing in Altona for the last few years without really an asset. So now we actually have an asset. We are a mining exploration company. So invest now and follow the journey over the next few years. I still think we're undervalued versus our UK peer group. People can go and do their own research to determine that. I think finally that whilst on Aquis, sometimes people find it very hard to buy our stock, but a move to the London Stock Exchange, which I hope is going to be in the next couple of months, it'll do two things. It'll open up more acquisition opportunities for us because the LSE paper is worth a lot more. And I think also it's going to provide a lot better access to the cash we need to develop these projects. And we are talking tens of millions of pounds to get them done. So they're the three reasons.
Excellent stuff. Christian, good to chat to you. And like I said, lots going on now. So hopefully we'll be catching up in the not too distant future. Thank you very much.
I will speak to you again soon. Thanks, Justin.
Okay, it's time for the top five most followed companies on Vox Markets in the last 24 hours. They are at five. Tissue Regenics Group, up 6%, pretty much to 0.68. At four, Helium One, down 3.14% to 26.25. At three, Tern, it's up 2.8% to 27.5. At two, Cloud Break Discovery, down 8.75% to 3.65. And at one, it's what I covered on the weekend. It's my high five, one of my high five conviction stocks, Biome Technologies, up 5.43% to 4.85. Check that out at voxmarkets.co.uk. Now it's time to look at the most read RNSs. They are as follows. At five, Hurricane Energy, results of sanction hearing. At four, Fast Forward Innovation, sale of shares in Portage Biotech. At three, Supply Acme Capital, publication of 2020 annual accounts. At two, Escapant, trading update. And at one, Avacta Group, result of AGM. Check those out, voxmarkets.co.uk. That's it for the podcast. Thanks for listening. Muchos apreciado.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite. Nothing in this podcast is intended as investment advice, and the people in this podcast may hold positions in the stocks they talk about. Do not buy anything based solely on a tip or recommendation. Please do your own research.